no inventory price is going to continue to go up. No matter what anybody says, it's not a crash. There's so much equity in these homes. We've talked about that. Foreclosures are very little. You don't run into them here. You run into a few short sales. But there's just so much, so many buyers still looking when the spring comes here. Like when this, it's just insanity. I'm sure Denver's the same way. Once the weather turns nice, everybody's looking. There's nothing to look for. So the only way to drop this is to pull demand completely out or very limited and drive a ton of inventory in. Well, new construction can't keep up. They're getting flooded because resale's so low. So you would need an absolute ton of homes to show up on the market. Well, where are they going to come from?
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Living in Denver podcast. And today, I'm really excited because we're going to be joined by Jay Stallone, who's actually in Chicago. Now, I know normally we talk about Denver and what's going on in the market here, but what makes this so fascinating is that Denver and Chicago are two of the biggest migratory cities in the country, meaning people move from Denver to Chicago and Chicago to Denver more than almost any other pairing of cities in the country. And so Jay's going to bring a unique perspective from what the Chicago market brings. So if you're in Denver looking to move to Chicago, or if you're in Chicago looking to move to Denver, you might find this extremely valuable. So welcome, Jay. How you doing today?
What's going on?
Good, good. So tell me your story a little bit. You got into real estate. How long ago? Why did you get into this crazy awesome business to begin with? Start wherever you want to start.
So I worked for Comcast. I'm sure everybody can relate to working for big corporate America. I did 10 years, about 9.5, give or take. But the company just wasn't going in the direction that I was going, right? I was tired of making no money, working until 7, 8 o'clock at night. And I had a little human. She was about 2 at the time. And I remember getting home super late and I never knew what my schedule would be like. So I was like, how can I go to a job that I enjoy and not be, you know, in corporate America anymore? And I stumbled into real estate only because my wife bought a house from an agent. She's like, just get your license. It's easy. Sure it is. So I got my license and I dual careered for 2 years. So I worked like 7:30 to 6:30 at Comcast. And then I did real estate afterwards or real estate during and then real estate in my off days. And it was rough. To anybody that does dual career and has tried it, it may look good on the outside, but it is the roughest days I've ever experienced. And what I learned is just you have to time block. I wasn't time blocking. So I started time blocking my days. I learned to take calls in the middle of work. A lot of stuff to balance. And then you learn there's no weekends, right? You don't get weekends trying to work two jobs. So I did it, and then I went solo and full time November of 23. Just finally said, you know what? Let's see if I can make it, and I'm still here.
Yeah, and you've had a pretty productive, you know, beginning first couple of years. I know here in Denver, it's what I don't know what the numbers are in Chicago, but it's about basically the 5% do all of the business, right? I think it's like 50% of all agents out there don't even do a single transaction a year here. And I know you kind of got your start off too with a bang. And how though? Like I talk to a lot of struggling agents who don't even, you know, can't get a single client in a year or two. And I know you've had quite a few deals under your belt. So where was your kind of initial like plan of attack, marketing, whatever you do to actually just get a client?
So when I started, luckily I was part of a team, right? It's hard to do showings when you're working another job and trying to look like you're not working another job. So I was lucky to get a few clients from that. My first few closings to kind of get my jump was some like Zillow leads, which, you know, were hot in 21, 22. You could close a house on Zillow without thinking about it. And then, you know, it's like, how do I find other people? And I learned that people that know you like you and trust you, right? Everybody says it. It's like they ring the same thing over and over. And I was actually lucky enough, my first 4 or 5 months, a friend of mine's parents were selling their house. And they're like, hey, can you send us some information? They didn't know me, but they knew my wife is best friends with their daughter. So they're like, come by and sell the house. So I met them. They'd become like family to me. And I listed their home. Ironically enough, their neighbor had thought about listing for 3 years. So at that listing appointment, they're like, hey, Karen down the street, they want to sell their home. And we've already talked to them. Can you go talk to them and sell their home too? Sure. Seems like an easy process. So luckily, half of my business really came from Sphere. Everybody says Sphere, right? But it's really just people believing in you and saying, hey, I'm a realtor. And I was pretty upfront, like, hey, I work on the job. And that I'm just here to help, right? they knew I had a little human, they had a wife, and they could relate because most of them have kids or they have grown up kids that have kids. So I just kind of leaned into knowing people.
Which is great. It's not easy to get referrals. It's not easy for anything in this business, right? And it's a lot of faith that someone puts in you, especially when you are on the newer side, right? That you can do the job and you can do it well. So big kudos to you for breaking through. And I have no doubts, you know, there's a big future for you. Now, those of you who don't know the Chicago area, funny enough, I'm actually from Chicago myself. I moved here 20 years ago. I haven't looked back. I love it out here. My family's still in Chicago. We still go there occasionally. I know Chicago pretty well. But for those that don't, Jay, talk to me about where you specifically work. Because I know agents here in Denver, we work all over the city. Like, it takes us 30 minutes to get from one side of the city to the other, even with rush hour traffic. I know that's not the same thing for Chicago, but do agents there work all over the city, or do you kind of have your, you know, parts of town that you work in? Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, so Chicago's massive, right? I'm not sure relatively how big Chicago is to Denver. I've been there twice only in my life.
I would say 3 to 5 times bigger.
Okay, so it's huge.
Easily.
Chicago as a city is a different entity. When everybody says I'm from Chicago, I'm not from Chicago. I'm actually from the suburbs of Chicago. I can get to Chicago from Addison, where I grew up, in like 25, 30 minutes, depending on where I was going. So I service all the western suburbs, which is about an hour, hour and a half outside of Chicago. And then I'll service North Chicago. And I say North Chicago because there's a difference. You have like your Edison Park, your Jefferson Park, Norwood Park. I know that like the back of my hand because I spent a lot of my 20s at the bars.
Yep.
And a lot of my good friends still live in Chicago. So I'll service most of North Chicago. But when you get into like the heart of Chicago, there's so many different pocketed communities. The parking's different. The access is different. If you don't live in the city, it's harder to know. And then you have downtown. It's like, I'll go to downtown. Will I sell in downtown? No, I'm not that experienced. And I'd be lying if I was. So the suburb is kind of where I grew up. Western from Addison all the way out to, I lived in Plano. If you ever look Plano up, it's middle of nowhere. I live in Aurora now. Sorry, I got an animal running around.
Right.
I live in Aurora. So I live like 40 minutes. Everybody knows Naperville, right? Naperville, they call Chicago, or Napervillians. So I service most of that. And then I'll go all the way up into like Lake in the Hills and surrounding. So it's a huge bubble of Chicago, but not exactly Chicago, right? And there's a lot of people moving to the suburbs from Chicago because people end up having kids or they want the less busy lifestyle. They kind of want a little bit of land. So you see a lot of people coming out west because of that.
Yeah, no, totally. And for those that don't know, like if you were in the heart of Chicago, because I used to work construction, back off of I-90 far out. It was like 50 still miles, 60 miles out. and that's when I, many, many decades ago now, funny enough. How far out can you drive from like the heart of Chicago and still be in suburbs?
That's an interesting question. Heart of Chicago, you're probably 20 minutes out, give or take.
Yeah. Okay.
It depends on if you're trying to go in 290 or 90, right? Because the traffic's terrible. But you can end up in like River Forest, Maywood. You can end up in Park Ridge, which is like Park Ridge, Niles, Evanston is like that north side. Mm-hmm. You're on the border, right? It's like 6 minute drive at best. Like I always pass by the Pickwick. If you ever go to Park Ridge, Pickwick is known by everybody. I think it's still there. I drive it all the time. My buddy lives right there in Edison Park, which is Chicago, right? But it's like a suburb to me.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting too. Cause I mean, we have our own little neighborhood sort of feeling places here, but I think in Chicago, it's much more prevalent. You know, a lot of my family lives in Elmwood Park. We grew up in Mount Prospect. Mount Prospect is not Chicago proper. Elmwood Park is, depending on how your zip code manager is working and what it says. Right. So market there, right? I know the market here in Denver. I know how hyper we are, but if someone, you know, was just to ask you, hey, how's the market in Chicago? What's kind of the bullet points of what the real estate market is like? Is there a median sales price or is it just all over the board? Like, what would you describe to a buyer, right? Looking in Chicago, hey, what should I expect out of the market here?
Chicago's crazy. The market in the spring is always heated, right? So you always get multiple offers. A lot of investors are looking, even at the rates now, you'd be surprised. And investors are pulling cash out of who knows where. Yeah. But the farther you get from the city, the cheaper it gets, probably like Denver. If you want to be in the city, you're paying a ton of money. When you get just a little bit west of it or south of it, it gets a little bit cheaper, but it's still the most expensive you're going to run into. Like DuPage County is usually the lowest inventory and has some of the highest prices. And then you have Naperville, which is, you know, you have $500,000 is like a little home. And then you get to million plus if you want like a nice home. The further west you get, mostly it's cheaper, but then you get pocketed into certain spots. So if you're in Geneva, St. Charles, or Batavia, the pricing feels like Naperville again, right? So if you want a big house, you're talking $800,000, $900,000. Okay. If you end up in the, you know, north, you end up in these pockets that are really expensive. So you have to know kind of what kind of lifestyle you want, because I've lived all over. So like from Addison to Plano, I live in Aurora now, Carroll Stream, like all over the place. There's different lifestyles and pricing changes drastically. First-time homebuyers lately are going to new construction here just because there is no inventory. And new construction, you know, you can either get a pre-built home where we call them spec homes, or you can get one that takes about 9 months to build. And they're cheaper, usually, than trying to go find a home.
Interesting. So where I know here in Denver, we have an issue with land, right? And there's not much available in Denver proper. You have to go to the outer loops to find the new build properties in the 500 to 600-ish range for 1,800 square feet, three bedroom, two bath, you know, sort of ranch deal. And I know we're having the same experience here where interest rate incentives are extreme with the new builds, right? And they're offering to get you in at 4% or so. So yeah, we're having a lot of people go to new builds too versus being further in the inner city because the dollars just stretch a lot farther with the new builds. But what kind of areas, like I'm thinking of Chicago in my head, I'm struggling to think of like, where are these new build communities, or am I wrong? And there is land available for developers on a bigger size to build 500 home communities.
What part of Chicago did you live in when you were here?
Mount Prospect is where I last left. So I grew up at Milwaukee and Irving area. When I started school, we moved out to the suburbs, Mount Prospect. Then when I was 18 or 19, I moved back and I moved to Roscoe Village.
Okay, so you're like closer to the city feel at all times.
Yeah.
You're not finding new construction in those neighborhoods. Okay. And if you are, they're probably townhomes. Land is very limited. It was limited then. It's the same thing now. Okay. So the towns that you're typically going to run into are Yorkville. It was like one of the fastest growing towns in Kendall County. Booming, absolutely booming. You can get a full custom home there, a semi-custom home if you want to be particular, for about $600,000 or less. You can get a 3,000 square foot home. You can customize the siding, everything else. Yorkville has been booming for like the last, I don't know how many years, but it started as nothing. All the restaurants are there and they're slowly growing. And then all the buildings there. So like they have so much land in Yorkville. They've been building one community called Grand Reserve for I think 10 years. There's just so much land to take up. Wow. And so the prices went from like maybe $150,000 back then. So now to get a new home, you're talking 360 plus in new construction.
Yeah.
And then you got Plainfield, right? Everybody knows Plainfield. It was literally just fields. All the land's in Plainfield. And Plainfield's booming as well. You got Bartlett is building big communities. So these big builders, your D.R. Hortons, Lennar, MI Homes, Pulte, they will scoop up every piece of land they can find to build communities. And they're doing it rapidly.
Interesting. So would you say Chicago overall, all the suburbs, everything, is fairly developer friendly?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I'm not sure what you're going to reference developer friendly, but...
Yeah. Well, I say that because here we have lots of issues. The land that's available here now, for the most part, is because there was some sort of barrier, right? Whether it's a hill, ravines, a creek, a river, and all of that, because we're high desert here, you know, people, it's the whole NIMBY thing, not in my backyard. I've got a developer friend who goes and plots out, you know, 50 to 1,000 home lots, and it takes him years to do in all the community meetings. I mean, he gets death threats very commonly for being on the front end of development. So that's what I mean here. Like it's very, people don't want new build properties here. We understand that it's a necessary thing, but like, yeah, the places where people can build are where nobody else wants them to build, if that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah, no, it's not here.
Okay.
Playing field is huge. It's always D.R. Horton, Lennar. You get a lot of big builders across the street from each other building or next door, yeah, pretty much, or in the same community. Sometimes it's crazy. They're pretty friendly. And there's, I mean, we're not Denver, right? So it's all flat land. It's super boring, yeah, in my opinion, versus Denver. Right? I've seen the mountains. It's beautiful. There's no mountains here that I've seen. So it's a lot of farmland, right? So like a lot of times, yeah, they'll just sell the farmland off to communities and they'll build bigger communities. The hardest thing here is trying to find land. I would say home with land, not land itself. You're not going to get a home with an acre here unless you're in an older community or you find it like an area that's not built as much. What you're mostly running into now is quarter acre or less new construction. Some customization, but you're not going to get a lot of it depending on the builder. Some builder, it's just what you see is what you get. There's no options. Some builders, you can pick a lot of cool stuff. It's like being in a candy store as a kid.
Fascinating. Yeah, no, we are not. It doesn't sound like we are nearly up and up on as much new builds as you guys have there for sure. Which is great. It seems like it's an incredible opportunity. And so with that, like investment opportunities, like what if someone was coming there, whether it's a second home, right, to buy as a rental or to buy for their kids, right, for some instead of a college fund, right, buy them a house sort of deal. We all know that routine. Areas for investors, investment money that you're seeing? Like, are we talking condos and townhomes as rentals? Are the HOAs too expensive? Are we talking single families because the maintenance is lower? Like, what are you seeing as opportunities for someone wanting to park some money as an investor?
So I have a few. One of my biggest investors loves condos. And you got to find investor-friendly communities. Some are no rentals at all. Some are 10% or less, and some it's the Wild West. You can be up to like 50-some percent or whatever they want. And what you'll find is that the friendlier the investor property, the more competitive you run into though. So it could be full, it needs a full rehab, 10, 15, 20, 30 grand or more, and investors chase it down because there's only one of them left. So it all depends on where you're at. I got a friend in the city, but the city's tough because the price of the city's gotten so expensive. And the rates are what, 7% now, as of now. It's hard to cash flow something like that. You're talking $500,000-$600,000. Rents are pretty good, but not enough to cash flow. And a lot of people that have bought houses back then, you'll have a 3-flat in the city that they paid, you know, 200 grand for. They're going to try to sell for 700 grand with the tenants in place. We'll take a wild stab what the tenants are paying.
Yeah.
Wait now, less.
Real quick, a 3-flat. Explain what that is for someone who doesn't know.
So a 3-flat is 3 rentable units. Basically, it looks like a 3-story building. You have a first floor, second floor, and a third floor. We call them 3-flats, 2-flats, 4-flats. It's controversial to some people, but it's a 3-flat in my book. And a lot of times in the city, if you're in the city specifically, you have to see if it's a legal 3-flat. The city runs rampant with 2-flats with, they call them in-law suites or in-law units. So it's a 2-unit with a basement unit that's finished, or a 3-unit with a basement unit that's finished. It's really not a legal 3-flat.
Gotcha. Interesting. So what would be considered a good cash flow in Chicago, no matter what, right? I mean, you've got the more savvy investors who maybe don't want as much. You've got the mom and pops just wanting to buy a second place as a potential investment. Like, do you have any rules or set guidelines of like, hey, this is what makes a good deal here in Chicago?
I'm not the best investor agent, right? I do okay. So I'm not like a king by any means. But one of the investors that I use, he wants at least $200 a month because it's really hard to cash flow. Yeah. 500 a month unless you're absolutely killing it. My other friend who's an investor, it's like $1,000 a month he's doing, but it's also a 3-flat, which isn't really 1,000 now, right? Now 1,000 divided by 3. But the city versus the suburbs, typically the city rentals, they're paying for the water. So there's a lot of weird nuanced things in these investors in Chicago. Mm-hmm. In the suburbs, it's hard to cash flow only because like a 1-bedroom rental in say Plano or Bloomingdale is like $1,500.
Yep.
Right. So relatively super easy to say, a typical condo is about $150,000, give or take.
Okay.
So you're really not cash flowing very big anyway. Where you make your money is kind of what I do for some of my investors, is find things that are off market, just like I'm sure you try in Denver. Yep. If you can find it where nobody else is looking, you can typically get a better deal.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I'd say that's similar here. If you can cash flow $300 a month, that's like a rock star deal here. You know, the game here, the name of the game here. And I have investors that don't care about cash flow at all. Like, it's just part of, they want to just break even after their vacancy rates and, you know, maintenance and stuff like that, because the name of the game here is appreciation, right? And so I feel like that's what a lot of markets are going to around the country, period. You know, it's getting harder and harder for those pure 1% rule, you know, numbers. Like, they just don't really exist. So I know something else that's big, kind of switch topics here just a bit. Is purpose, right? A lot of us as agents, and most people don't know that part of us and why we do what we do, things that we do to give back. But I know your purpose and giving back is a big part of you and your business. And I just want you to talk about that for a minute. Talk to me about, yeah, your purpose in the business of real estate.
Yeah. So I'm married, right? And my wife's a BCBA. And everybody says, what's a BCBA? Everybody. Yeah. It's a board certified behavior analyst. So my wife works with children with special needs and autism. She worked in clinics. Now she works in a school. I have good friends that have children with autism. And she's able to connect with them and kind of explain them kind of what programming is and how to work on it together, right? As a friend. So she happened to actually work for a company that's a small clinic, and it's one person owned and it's local. So I know that giving back to one person for their clients is going to make a bigger impact than a huge corporation that I probably never see the person. So I picked a small local clinic. She's from here. She's a BCBA, as they all have to be, but smart lady. I learned about her life story for like 3-4 hours. And I was like, hey, what if every closing I had, I just give you a portion back, and that can help you with buying clinic materials, laptops, sensory bins, all types of stuff. So she sent me a wish list. She's like, hey, it's tough for me to kind of do everything. So if I could get these items for the clinic, we'd be super grateful. So I have a list here in my drive. And every time I close, I just text her like, hey, what's most important today? So I'm going to pick up 2 laptops in the next couple of days for her so they can do stuff between the clinicians and the actual clients. And then I'll probably be doing a sensory bin after that. And I find just giving back, everybody gives back to firemen and police and you name it.
Yeah.
Nobody gives back to the community there. And I was like, I want to be different, right? I want to give back to where nobody's looking. And I think it'll make a bigger impact.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it, as it goes on, as we have more access to information, I think that sort of cause hits home with a lot of people, right? Myself included, close friends of ours. And we know the challenges on just getting the right information, you know, and testing children at certain age and the difference between boys and girls and special needs and when things become prevalent. So I think that's amazing. You know, we are community leaders, I'd like to think, right? We know our neighborhoods. We know the restaurants coming in and out. We know business owners. You know, you drive by people's houses all the time that you've connected with and know. And I think it's a hugely important part. So hats off to you, buddy, for being a part of that. Like that, that means a lot to a lot of people, I'm sure. So now back on when someone's making this shift, right? Migration in and out. I actually just looked up the numbers. So if you want to know the numbers of how many people move back and forth from Chicago every year, it's north of 5,000 for each.
Really?
5,000 people minimally a year move from Chicago to Denver and Denver to Chicago, right? We are one of the highest patterns in the entire country. Almost like you can set a watch to it. That's how consistent we are. I know I meet people almost daily here from Chicago, like, and we grew up miles from each other, you know, back home. Yeah. And we both moved out here and we both got stories. Like, Denver is made up of 90% people that are not from here. We don't have a Midwestern bubble feel to us. I know my family, like, they've never explored much. I mean, they came out here years ago and they literally asked me in Denver if we were in the mountains. And I was like, oh God, no, it's flat from here to Chicago. Like, well, point that out. There's a few hills in Kansas. But no, we're not. We're at the foothills. We're at the base. Like, it is a very flat city until you get out to the outer reaches, and then it gets a little bit more hilly. The mountains are to the west of us, and, like, they're big, and they're there, and they're in charge. But it's always fascinating, you know, how many people that I do actually meet from Chicago and how close we've been. And there's a big migration back to Chicago, I think, as people get older. And once you start having kids, mom and dad are in Chicago. And now you realize how important it is to have grandma and grandpa around to help out, because daycare is not a cheap thing. You know, a ton of people moving back to the Midwest from Denver, just simply because of pricing, right? People are getting priced out, unfortunately. But if someone was moving back to Chicago or moving to Chicago from Denver, challenges, right? What are the challenges that they're going to face? And let's just assume it's a, you know, move up sort of buyer situation, someone who's been through this situation before. What are they going to face in Chicago as far as the biggest challenges when looking for a house?
I think it's the biggest problem we all experience is there's no houses, everybody will tell you, right? Like, literally no houses. And it, if you get into DuPage County, it's less than a month. If you get outside of DuPage, it's like a month and a half. Yeah, so there was a point where like 3 weeks.
So a month, month and a half of inventory. We know what that means. But what does that mean for your layperson out there as far as the amount of inventory?
So basically, if every home sold and no new home came to the market, it would take 3 weeks to deplete supply.
Yeah.
So like nothing. And we're talking nothing. I mean, years ago, I paid $270 for my house. It's almost worth $400 now in DuPage. If you wanted a three-bed house under $300K, you might want to just move back to Denver, because it's impossible. There's just – some of these communities are so expensive.
Yeah.
And even if they're not expensive, it's just tough to find certain things.
Yeah.
So the struggle that people have is, A, finding houses. And I usually have a solution for that one. That's pretty easy. The other one is – I talked to people from Dallas, just talking to you a little bit ago – taxes. You have to account for property taxes. They're not Denver property taxes. People in Dallas think they have high taxes.
Yeah.
We have some high taxes. And I didn't know that relatively, right? Just what I grew up in.
Yeah.
But taxes for like a standard home here, you could be looking at $9,000 or $10,000.
Oh my gosh.
If you're in like a new construction Oswego area, Yorkville area, you can end up at like $16,000 in some of these spots. It all depends on where you are and how big they are and size of lots. But like the cheapest taxes I know about are condos, and they're still like $4,000.
Wow. All right. To put that in reference, I know Cook County, Illinois, northern part of Chicago, right? I think Cook County includes Chicago proper, right? And then
yeah. Cook's all
parts of it north up to O'Hare Airport, all that stuff.
Yeah. It's huge.
And the taxes there, I think, are the highest in the country, if I'm not mistaken. I think you're the top tick. It's either you or LA, I think. It's one of you guys.
I think LA's worse.
Ironically,
and, go ahead.
I was going to say, in comparison, so like all I knew was Denver. Like when I moved to Denver, I wasn't in real estate, right? 20 years ago. I got into the game about 15 years ago or so. Had no idea what it was when we went to go sell my mom's house. It was appraised at like $300,000 at the time, right? This is years ago, a handful of years ago. Her senior discount taxes in Cook County were like north of $6,000 a year. And I was like, what the heck is this? To give you some perspective, in Denver, we're at about 0.5% of the property's value. Now there's a bunch of, and a little less than that. So if you have a home that's worth $500,000, your property taxes here are probably about $2,200 a year.
Sign me up. I'll move now.
So when I have people moving out here from Chicago that might have had a house that sold at $400,000, let's say, like this was years ago, they could afford the same monthly payment up to about $600 to $650 just because of the difference in property taxes.
It makes a huge difference. We thought about moving actually recently.
Yeah, come on by. The water's warm, buddy.
We thought about Dallas because I keep seeing the TikTok and Instagram of all the brand new, amazing Dallas homes.
Oh, yeah.
And then Nashville, because my wife loves country music. And the problem is that we went to do Nashville 6-7 years ago before Nashville became what it is now. So $350,000 in Nashville, you could buy a really nice house.
Yeah.
Now I think the average price is like $600 plus.
Wow.
but their taxes are still low. So it's what offset do you want?
Right? Yeah, I know. Pick your poison, the devil you know versus the one you don't. So how do you work with people to get around some of these challenges? I know what we're doing here a little bit, but I'm having struggles with my lateral movers. And a lateral mover is someone, you know, either kind of upsizing or downsizing, could be about the same price. And we're struggling because of the lack of inventory in making these moves. So what are you doing there to be creative to help people find stuff or to make the move, you know, less painful?
So lateral movers, you're not going to move them. My whole neighborhood, I hang out with my neighbors, right? The kids all play together. They can't conceivably move from 3% to 7%, right? So there's motivation, right? They if they live in a big enough home for their family, they're not moving. The people that are typically moving here, sad to say, it's death, divorce, and force, right? Or really have the choice because they're doing okay. Yeah. But divorce is pretty common. You run into that a lot. People passing away. You have to sell typically the assets. I've experienced that in my life. Like, we just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And anybody that's looking to move up or lateral move and they're like, hey, I'm okay with taking a higher payment here. My biggest strategy lately over the last year, because 23 and 24 almost seem like the same year to me, is finding things that are off market, right? And everybody says off market properties. I'm not talking to PLN. I actually go out and prospect complete neighborhoods. So if you say, hey, I want a 4-bedroom house in this neighborhood, I will go prospect an entire neighborhood and find one.
Yep.
People are looking to sell. You just have to find them. And you got to get more creative than ever. The MLS is not the only place you're going to find a home anymore. And typically if it hits the MLS, everybody's going to go get it now. So.
Yeah, totally. So just to let you folks know, I know what Jay is saying and I know how valuable it is, but to kind of lay that out, everything you're seeing online is not everything that's for sale, right? And Jay will literally go to that neighborhood. You're looking for that 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath, you know, 2,000 square foot ranch with a basement, whatever it may be. And he will canvas the neighborhood to try to find you that sale. Now, we can look this information up, right? It's not easy as a consumer, but we have tools at our disposal where we can get an entire list of all the properties in that neighborhood that fit that need. And I think I don't hear of many agents doing stuff like that often, but why not? Why would an agent not do that for a client, Jay? Because that seems like the most ridiculously valuable thing ever.
It's a lot of work.
yeah.
I'll be honest. Most people say, hey, there's no inventory. And I said, you know what's funny is look at the neighborhood. There's 300 homes. There's inventory. You just got to find it. And it sounds stupid. I get it. But my own neighbor, right? I called her talking to her about a food drive. And she's like, hey, I'm looking to sell. I know when she's going to sell. I know what she's going to sell for probably because I'm going to list it. I know what her house looks like. Right? Nobody knows where she's moving to. Nobody knows. I do though. So I have a list of people that either can't move yet or based on certain situations, they're looking to move in a certain time frame. And I just have a database of them. And I touch base with them. Hey, you still thinking about selling? Hey, I got somebody. Somebody said, and they're investors or people in general, the best homes are off-market homes, right? Once they come to the MLS, you all have the same shot. If I get them off the market, which is non-PLN, non-active, non-Redfin, Zillow, and all the sites you use. If I just have a list and I can connect you with the actual seller of the home, you're going to get a better deal typically. And you're going to have to compete with almost nobody.
And I think there's an important note to add on top of that. I mean, we buy a lot of houses here, cash. We flip houses. If you've been listening to this show, like, you kind of know our shtick a little bit. We branch everything beyond just being an agent. But yeah, we end up with a list of potential sellers like that. And the question I always have kind of thrown at me from this perspective is that, you know, well, why would anybody sell their house off market? Like, that just seems stupid. What people that aren't in the business don't understand is that most people, I would say 75% of people, don't want to go through the hassle, right? They don't want to make sure that their home is always show ready and ready to go and drop of a hat, get the animals together, get the heck out of the house, you know, wait for a showing to happen at 7 o'clock on a Friday night. But if you can have a good solution that is beneficial for all parties, yeah, the buyer might be able to get a better deal, but honestly, they might actually have to step up depending on the seller to say, hey, this house is off market. It's actually more valuable now, but most buyers are okay with that if they don't have to necessarily compete. And most sellers are okay with it when they're like, hey, you've got one or two showings for me, like, and I don't have to rearrange everything. And like, they're just going to look at the house as it currently is. Yeah, you betcha. And there's a lot of value in that to a lot of people. So I think that puts you easily, Jay, in the top 1% of all workers in this industry, because I've only heard that from a couple of other agents in the 15 years I've been in this business. So good. Go. Keep going. You're going to do awesome. Now, market predictions, right? Pull out your crystal ball. Where do you see Chicago going in the short term, like in the next 12 months, right? Are we crashing and burning? Are we dying? Is the sky falling? What's this election going to do? And where do you see you guys in 5 to 10 years from now? What's your predictions? And we won't hold you to it.
Please don't. No inventory price is going to continue to go up. No matter what anybody says, it's not a crash. There's so much equity in these homes. We've talked about that. Foreclosures are very little. You don't run into them here. You run into a few short sales. But there's just so many buyers still looking when the spring comes here. Like it's just insanity. I'm sure Denver's the same way. Once the weather turns nice, everybody's looking. There's nothing to look for.
Yeah.
So the only way to drop this is to pull demand completely out or very limited and drive a ton of inventory in. Well, new construction can't keep up. They're getting flooded because resale is so low. So you would need an absolute ton of homes to show up on the market. Well, where are they going to come from? They're foreclosures? Short sales?
I don't know.
Good luck on that idea. So I can think it'll continue to go up. We go through the ebb and flow typically. Like spring, summer is the hottest markets. Fall and winter, it slows a bit. The best deal I tell everybody, and they think I'm crazy, I've bought and looked at homes in the crappiest of times. So I buy homes in November, December when it's slow. People don't want to move during Christmas or Thanksgiving. If a home's on the market, they typically have to sell it or want to sell it, and there's less competition. So you get a better deal. You get better credits. Every year shows up the same way. It's my opinion, and it's just how I bought my homes. 5 to 10 years, you know, that's tough. I do see a lot of people leaving Chicago. I didn't know that many people actually come from Denver back to Chicago, but I'm seeing a lot of Chicago out in my own brokerage because I have agents that are like, hey, I need an agent in Florida, which is pretty kind. Or he goes to Florida.
Yeah.
I'm almost curious to see what will happen. I don't know if I have a prediction. I really hope that at some point we get some more inventory. From where, I'm not sure yet, right? Like,
yeah.
I hope we get a normalization of pricing, because what we've struggled with, probably like you have, is that first-time home buyers are struggling to move. And rentals here are just expensive.
Yeah.
And they're building full rental communities here. I'm not sure if Denver is. But we have builders that build on land instead of new construction. They'll do new construction rentals.
Yeah.
And they're going to capitalize on all the renters.
Yep. 100%. Yeah, we're in the same boat. There was some big law firm that came out years ago that made it. They found a loophole in new construction condos. And there was a period of 5 years where like no builders were building condos because the risk was just way too high on litigation for construction defects. And so they all just built rental units. And so it pinched the inventory even that much more. I'm on board with you, buddy. Like, I don't know. And I've been wrong for the last 3 years. Heck, I tell everybody that, like, I'm done predicting and making actions based on a prediction, right? I make my actions based on yearly cycles, right? We drop 5 to 10% in price every winter. We go up by 6 to 12% or more every spring to summer. Like, that's the cycle that you can count on. Other than that, no one knows. And there are many people out there that are paid really big bucks, and they've all been wrong for the last, God, when did they start calling for a crash? 2015, I think, was when they really were starting to push. Yeah, Robert Kiyosaki was pushing. The market is done. We're all going to crash. Buy gold. That's the only thing that's going to hold value. Here we are, 150% higher in equity from when all these famous people started calling for it. Like, they just don't know, ladies and gentlemen. Your opinion is just as valid, especially if you're just a regular, you know, typical home buyer. Make sure you can afford the monthly payments. And like, if there's a storm, ride it out. But we've seen it. It happens so rarely that it's hard to base a decision on buying the dip, so to speak. Well, Jay, it's been fascinating. And if someone wants to reach out to you, what's your preferred method of someone that's, you know, looking to move to the Chicago area. How do they get a hold of you, and what's your preferred social platform that people can follow you on?
So you can call me at 630-689-7908. I answer my phone way too much. I work way too late. Or just email me. I'm sure you'll put a link in, but it's just Jay Stallone, like Sylvester, not related, .re@gmail.com. Not that full email, but it's just Jay Stallone.re@gmail.com. I'm all over. So I'm on TikTok here and there, but Facebook's easy for me. Instagram's easy for me. I can't be on every platform in the world, right? I should be, but I'm not. And then I do have a YouTube channel. You can always see some of my content there that we're currently growing, and we have some stuff coming up, talking about the market and places to go shop. And I'm sure I'll give you the link, and you can post it up somewhere, because it's yeah. @homeswithstallone.com. It should just be @homeswithstallone.
Great. Yeah. And we'll have all those links, ladies and gentlemen, in the description below here. And if you need anything in Chicago, feel free, reach out to Jay. And until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, happy housing.